Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. And today is episode 168 with the title, Disrupting the Norm with Love. And I have the absolute honour and privilege to welcome Heather Eggington. Heather is a disruptor of the norm and a truth, trust and love activator, passionate about creating deeper human connections in an often disconnected world. And when I asked Heather to describe her superpower, she said it is the ability to bring strangers together and leaving them feel truly connected. Wow. Hello, Heather. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Joanne. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolute pleasure. This is a return visit. My wife Marie and I came on your show back in January, I think it was.
Yes, you came on. It was such an amazing conversation. It was the wealth of you two. And you were the one first couple that I went live with. It was amazing.
We talked about my gender transition. We talked about how Marie coped with that. So, yeah, that's online. And I'll signpost that in the show notes. So if you want to listen to that as well, that'd be fantastic. So, Heather, you describe yourself as the truth, trust and love activator. Can you describe what that means to you and how it shapes the way you connect with people?
Firstly, Joanne, thank you. I know I'm giggling a lot. We've had such fun before we even got on to actually recording. So I'm just trying to rein in my giggles. And so what being a truth, trust and love activator is all about is really, in my company, that is automatically what happens. There are people around me that cannot lie. They seem to find themselves trusting themselves more to be honest, right? Self-honest and be honest with what's going on with them. And through that, they just love themselves more because they can see how much beauty there is inside them. It's just one of my superpowers. We all have them. It's just not always easy to really recognize without us doing anything what our actual powerful presence really creates for other people just by being ourselves.
It's interesting what you say there about the truth, and it starts, as you, I think you're right, it starts with ourselves, because if we're not careful, what we find ourselves doing is creating our own lie, which then becomes a version of our truth, doesn't it, if we're not careful. It's that inauthenticity, it's that pretense with the world that get either scared to come out or you're not prepared to face up to something, so you create this new normal for yourself and that becomes your story if you're not careful.
Yeah, it's like an illusion, really, Joanne, sometimes. And look, it's not even something maybe we consciously do. It might be unconsciously something that we kind of lead and live our life with and through and view the world through, that's actually not even ours. Most of the time, the lies we tell ourselves are inherited from past generations, significant adults in our life that have also gone through the same experience, kind of had to try and make themselves be something they're not just in order to fit in or belong or all of those things. So it's actually something that we've inherited and it's not even ours. However, it does mean that taking radical responsibility, I guess, for what we're not willing to continue lying to ourselves about or lying to other people about, right? You know, a good example of this, and this is some of the work I do with the Wealth of Women program that I run. A good example of this is we've been led to believe that you're not a woman unless you, or you're not, don't feel, shouldn't feel complete as a woman unless you've had children, right? And that is a lie. However, consciously or unconsciously, we tell ourselves, I have no children, hands up, I have fur babies, I have two rescue doggies. And I was led to believe that I was incomplete. And also women said to me, I'm really sorry to hear that you can't have children. And it's just like, nobody said I couldn't have children. They just weren't in my path, right? So just a good example of where really we maybe are delusioned into thinking that there's something wrong with us if we haven't gone the same way as other people have. And it's not true. It's just not true. So it's just a good example.
Yeah, I don't think having children has to define you. Okay, yes, it's a significant life event that occupies your primary brain for at least 20-odd years, and then it's still in the back of your brain even now. So our children are in their 30s. So we've been through that ultimate responsibility phase and that hanger-on phase and all those kind of phases. But now we're not post-children. We're post-worrying about children. And
I
so
like it.
Having children no longer defines who we are. They're a fantastic part of our lives and people we love and treasure, but they're not what they were 20 years ago. So it's a transient phase. When you talk about having children defines you, it's a transient phase. You become an active parent to being a kind of a long-lost parent. Or they don't need you anymore. So yeah, I think it's, but I also see how I'm now able to support my own mum, who's in her late 80s now. And my father passed away a couple of months ago. And so helping her through this transition from being married, although my father was in the nursing home, to being now a widower, single again, mm-hmm. and trying to reclaim her own independence and her own identity around that is a really interesting journey. And I hope I teach our children about how I've had to help my mum adjust to this so that they'll be there for either me or Marie at that point when we become a widow. So I think, yeah, it's important to learn that transition, I think. But yeah, it's, you say, it doesn't define me. I just know that I've got hopefully two children who will look after me later. So I've banked up that old age pension support credit.
I love it. Sparky, she's just woken up. I'm not sure that two dogs would be able to support me when I get into my elderly years. However, they fully support me now, right? And bringing out the best of me now. And I would say, you know, speaking to that, Joanne, firstly, sorry to hear about you losing your father a few months ago, and please send my love to your mother. This is a really harsh statement to make, so forgive me if this is a bit triggery, but ultimately, we don't necessarily mourn the person that we've lost. We actually mourn the identity that person gave us.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I mean, my relationship with my father wasn't great, and it surprised me how much I was emotionally connected to his passing, given that I had very little time for him when he was alive. And it was, you say, that I think, as you're right, it's clinging on to that identity of him being a father and me being a child, and just that break of that bond, if you like, in the living. And I think you summed it up really well there. It hit me more than I thought.
Yeah, and it is. People find it really surprising. They could have no real contact with a particular relative or friend, and then they find out they've passed, and it really hits them. And it is generally on a, I would say, depending on the person, right? Because I believe currently that we are all the same, yet we're just living on different timelines, right? So depending on the person, on average, I would say, me personally, I'd probably go through the loss, let's say, of an identity every 2 or 3 weeks. And what happens with that is the, what I call it, and this is a lot of my work with individuals, private work with individuals, is about getting them to, I guess, navigate and lead themselves through the grief, relief, disbelief and belief cycle. So, and that's what we experience when we lose somebody that we love very, very much, whether we're really connected to them or not. And even when we don't really love them that much, but it was what they gave us, you know, the identity, is you know, we go through the kind of the disbelief that someone's actually not here anymore, right? And then we kind of feel that grief of, and we grieve what was, right? What was before that's no longer the same. And then we go through that kind of phase of relief. It's like, oh, now there's this thing that's leaving us, these feelings that have probably given us a bit of dark days. And then we come out the other side in belief when we see that this person's not gone, they actually live on through us. And that is really powerful when we kind of get to that place. And it's not always in the space that I've done it, right? So it can take people a couple of 3 years if it's someone they've lived with on a daily basis. But it's just once somebody knows that's the kind of thing they're going to go through, then there's almost a little bit of peace that's found there, really.
Mm. Yeah, I just think about how my mum describes it, that if my father was in the nursing home for over 2 years, so she was very used to living alone, getting on with life. She used to visit him sometimes 2 or 3 times a week for an hour at a time. And she'd always save up things that she wanted to tell him on the next visit. So she always had something to talk about, because obviously his life was 4 walls and a window in the distance. And you could probably see the same tree, the same building, and that's all he could see. So his life was had no depth to it. It was very transactional. You know, eat, get changed, cleaned up, sleep, get up, not even get up, you know, sit up, have dinner, and then food, sleep, repeat sort of thing. So she used to save all these things up, and she said that, yeah, the strange thing is that she keeps thinking, oh, I must tell Dad that, oh, I must tell Dad that. And that's the biggest thing she finds, is that habit of interaction. I suppose I was heavily involved last year with sorting out some issues around his medication, his well-being. He had some reactions to medication and infection, which meant his personality changed really, really badly for the worse. And so I was dealing with care home issues, him issues type thing with old people's mental health, those kind of events. So it's a real, I got really, really engaged in this for about 2 months, really trying to sort this out. And we got him onto this really nice level playing field where it was really fine. And then he started to decline. So it's almost like, could have done with another 6 months of him being really a really nice person again, having had all that trauma in the summer. So yeah, it is strange. It's strange. You become very invested in that relationship, even though, as I say, even though it's strange for me, and my mum still sees it as well. So yeah. Grief is strange. Yeah, you were talking earlier about these layers of truth. And I was thinking about Breaking Bad, at the series, for example, where Walter, his truth got away from him, didn't it? He kept laying and laying and laying all these different events. And then he found he couldn't go backwards. The only way he could dig himself out was to dig deeper. And sometimes when you're inventing these truths or the language you're telling yourself who you are, you can become so engrossed in that, it's hard to find your way back to the truth again, isn't it?
I've never watched Breaking Bad. I don't know what you were referring to. But I think what you were referring to is the layers that we place on us, layers that we have to kind of work through or keep up with and remember. Oh, no, but I said I'm that type of person, and now I'm with this person, and I can't remember what person I am with this person. And so we add all these extra layers. I think that's what you're describing.
Yeah, if you've seen EastEnders, I don't know if you're an EastEnders fan, but you had...
I don't watch telly.
There was a recent character called Reese, and he became a serial killer, and one problem at a time got away from him, and he kept rationalising what he had to do based on the disaster of the situation he was in, rather than going back 10 paces and going, if I don't take the left-hand fork here and go right, things will be okay, even though they're tricky. But that's what we do. We make this poor decision and we can't go back, can we? We find it very difficult to reverse out of that one-way street.
Yeah, it can be like that. I think also a lot of Joanne, you know, as much as I don't watch telly, you know, that's why a lot of people are, let's say, aka maybe addicted to like series and soaps and characters, identities within these dramas, right? Because what they do is they so much see themselves that it could be them, right? That they could get to that place where they do something that's a bit criminal and they're like, how did I even get to this place? And it's just like, well, one lie after another just led to this, right? So ultimately, for us to understand within ourselves that there are these greater forces, just as there are the powers that be, the universe, God, whatever kind of terminology, there's also these other greater forces that come and try and take you out when you are really living and leading in your truth, right? And it's being able to discern between, is that my truth or is that something else? And it's really powerful. The questions sometimes that I find myself asking personal one-to-one clients, is that, like, is this really true for you, right? Or is this another reality that you have maybe been witnessing or that you have been led to believe is yours in truth? Like, is it yours, right? And it is quite a grounding question for the reason that you've just described with the characters in the TV shows, because it does force somebody, the energy disruption there, like the norm disruptor, right? From my perspective, it does force somebody to ask themselves and question themselves a lot deeper than maybe others have before, right? I like to play the why game, and I've done it with all amount different level of clients. So they're millionaires, CEOs, entrepreneurs, right? And it's five whys. Yeah. So someone would come with something that they want to create, let's say, and birth into the world. And then we play the why game with it. We're like, well, why is that really important to you? Why? Right. And it is a little bit intrusive, I'm not going to lie. And it is annoying as well, because I play it with myself, right? And it gets frustrating. But once we get to the root of why someone wants to create something, it's really powerful because they can see what it's rooted in. And if it's rooted in truth, brilliant. If it's rooted in love and trust, brilliant. But if it's not, it's like, well, that is not yours. You know, you're trying to create, let's say, in a false reality that's not actually yours. So it is really, I love that you've gone down this path. Have no idea. Can we say, whoever's tuning in, we did not know where this was going to go, right? So I appreciate your inquiries so much.
Yeah. And it happens, you know, it's almost like that we're too afraid to tell the truth. That, for, you know, we talk about that path left and right. Whatever reason it is, there's either shame, guilt, fear, whatever it is, causes us to want to take the path of the easiest path. The one with less stigma attached to it, less fear, less truth. How will I be judged? Whether we're having an affair, whether we've messed up at work, pushed the wrong button by mistake. You know, when you connected the first time earlier, I cut you off because I pressed the red X instead of the green tick. And you said, oh, it didn't work. And I could have just said to you, oh, that's strange. I don't know why that happened. I thought I might have pressed the X button instead of the tick button, because I've learned over the years it's much easier to just tell the truth at that junction. Because once you start on that lie, you then escalate it all the way through. And it becomes that relationship. It's built on that one mistruth or that easy excuse. If I'm late for a meeting, I just say to people, I'm sorry, I was completely daydreaming and I had no idea what the time was. And I suddenly looked at my watch and did OMG, and I hope you forgive me. So I'd rather say that than, oh no, my computer was playing up. Oh no, I had to dash to the doctors because I had a headache this morning. It's just tell the truth and be honest, because people go, oh, I've done that myself. And you end up having this big conversation about how we're all just human and we all get stuff wrong, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, that's the loving and compassionate and empathetic way of seeing truth, because if we're really honest, what I say is the truth. It kind of whisks up your insides and other people's as well. Say, for example, my example of not being complete as a woman without having children, you know, that is going to be polarizing for a lot of people, right? And so therefore the truth whisks people up, whereas lies, they twist you up. And when I say twist you up, Joanne, I mean physically your body contorts itself, contracts itself. I mean, this is going really out there, right? And my belief is it does cause and create cancer in human beings. The more we live a lie, right? My foundation, like now in life, is I'd rather have the whole world against me than live a lie, you know, and that also is very polarizing. But it's just like, why would I ever want to treat myself as something that's not valuable, that valuable enough to really honor its true power, ultimately? And unfortunately, as I, on my website, it tells people like the five kind of stages to working with me from a transformational perspective. And the first one is, like, we get rid of the lies we tell ourselves, right? So, and we get to the root of what created that, which is amazing, because it's all working in our favor. It's just that normally we kind of lead with lies, or let's say act a different way when we're a little bit triggered about something, because it just means we're not fully living in our true kind of path. You know, we're not living and leading in our true value as a person, which is all like easily kind of put back together. People can come back home to themselves. It's all easily remembered. But it's just like you say, the layers of lies, once they come back, it's like, oh, of course I understand. Now I see why this was happening to me, or now I see why I had this hip problem, or now I see why my digestive system's messed up, for example. And it's like, so once you notice and go back to the root of everything and see that it's all just because I started a lie here and then it just escalated. And it's like, how powerful is that, though? That it's simply following that energetic trail back to the root causes. It's amazing.
Because we look at the escalation. The first lie is 10 centimeters. The next lie is another 10 centimeters, everything is built on that first 10 centimeters. And to climb down from 10 meters after a year or whatever it may be, then people start unpacking all the lies, going, well, hang on a minute, you lied to me about that, and you lied to me about that, and you lied to me about that, and you, or I lied to myself about that, or I lied to myself about that, whatever it may be. And it's, you then become so invested in that new version of you. You know, you look at bigger mists and other people, you know, criminals, whatever it may be, become completely invested in this double identity. There's no way of backpedaling, because then your truth is so far removed from who you are now that you'll never be forgiven. And then you're trying to hold on to that and thinking, hang on a minute, I'm protecting the person I'm lying to. That becomes your new truth as well. You're doing it for them, not for you.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing I picked up on there was there's almost like a divide within ourselves. Yeah. And I know that you talk and you make a stand for equity, diversity and inclusion, right? So there's almost a place where we become a divided person. And work is a really good example of this. As someone who worked in the corporate world for 25 years, previously leaving as a projects director for IT professionals and management consultancies, who I was at work was not who I was at home. Yeah. And this like divide within us becomes almost the biggest point that you made about the 10 centimeters is so true, Joanne, because it we separate ourselves from, and specifically our body from, right? So we can always push through and make it into work. Yet when it comes to the weekend and have fun, we want to curl up on the sofa and just wallow in self-pity or eat loads of crap food or like, and just immerse ourselves in something so that we can forget about everything else, right? And it's like when you see that, if that's something you're experiencing, like I was experiencing, then there's almost a something that turns up to wake you up, right? I'll put it that way, right? Like a big jolt in something that's happened in your life that goes, really, like, am I really living my life this way? Because this clearly is not working for me. And for me, that was losing my cat. I had Lester. Yeah, I'm saying simple, but we all know, you know, living beings, whatever form they come in, right, are really valuable. And I was like, hold on a minute, I haven't got anything to be responsible for. Why am I slogging my heart out of work? Behind the scenes, I was already building a property portfolio for myself anyway. So it was like, why am I putting myself through this hell every day? When I can just go and do this. You know, it was like, I haven't got to have a fixed abode. You know, I can travel around now. So, you know, I'm so grateful for my cat harshly passing. And where it took me in the end. And that was, what am I now? 7. Yeah, 7 years ago. 7.5 years ago that I retired from having to work, as I call it. So it does, there is like a thing that comes along because people don't necessarily always just automatically choose it, I think is what I'm going to say, Joanne. Don't automatically wake up one day and go, I'm going to live my full truth today, you know, and then da-da, right? Like it is something like turns up that sort of says.
It keeps happening, doesn't it? It becomes this sort of kind of,
yeah.
You could feel something stalking you from behind going, I'm being, and then you feel this pressure to keep on the status quo, don't you? And I often describe this as, when I discovered this myself in my late 40s, the analogy I use is you get to Gatwick Airport and you get off out the taxi, and as you walk into the terminal, there's these really, really long travelators. It's almost like a mile of travelators. You get on, then you get off, then you get on, then you get off, and it takes you all the way into the departures lounge. And I describe it as, you know, I found myself on this travelator of life, just getting on there, and, you know, the ticket says you're going to Malaga. And you think, actually, I don't want to go to Malaga. I want to go somewhere else. So it's having the courage to hit the stop button, the metaphorical stop button of life on that travelator, take all your luggage off and just park up and go, so what do I really want to go now? Otherwise, you just carry on that escalator or travelator of life, doing what everybody else has told you you want to do. The expectations you started probably when you were 12 years old. I want to be this, I want to be that, this is who I am, this is my identity. And that gets shaped as you get older. And then suddenly you go, hang on a minute, I should be over there somewhere. How did I end up over here? And it's really difficult, as you say, we built that truth of who we are. How do you go backwards to find that path again? And it took me to gender transition and sell my IT company to do it, not for everybody. But yeah, wow. It's trying to have that bravery. I mean, you said you got out of your corporate life, and you now have a functioning new career as somebody who invests in property and does other things. So, yeah, it's a different way of being, isn't it?
Yeah, and it isn't the norm. Right, so let's just your decisions, you know, to walk your truth. Like that's not the norm, Joanne. Right, and the same for me. You know, me. Who does that? Who retires at 39 and declares that and says, right, I'm never going back to the 9 to 5, even though mine was 6 till 9 at night kind of job again, right? Like, who does that? Who buys their first house at 21 when everyone else has gone to university? Like, who goes against the grain? Right, exactly. They are out there, and I will speak this. Those greater forces, the ones that push against us living like this, will do everything in their power for us not to stand tall and be loud and proud about the decisions we've made that aren't the norm. Because that's societal conditioning. That's the systems and the processes. We're easily controllable if we're all nodding and going in the same direction. And it's just like, I'm not willing to do that. And there is like a recourse, you know, when we come home to ourselves, like, and who we have always been truly at heart, there's no fight. You just be that. Like you said about the options now, the way my business works, the worldview, it's an extension of my being. So why would I say my superpower is deep, truthful connection and be on a podcast with somebody and it not feel like we are deeply, truthfully connected? And we've met twice online. That's correct, isn't it, Joanne, right?
At least twice.
Yeah, and how do you feel in conversation with me?
You're an old friend. Yeah, like I've known you for 5 years.
See what I mean? So it's like a model completely what actually is possible. And look, that's my value. I'm living and leading in my value and totally embodied in that. That's not going to be the same for everyone. However, it's being in the position where we're willing to really take a good long look at ourselves and see how freaking incredible we actually are without the societal programming, without those greater forces like you've described, fear, regret, shame, all of those greater forces that suggest we should be this small thing that doesn't really matter. And it's just like, we really matter. But we have to decide that, you know, we make that decision. We have to make that decision within ourselves. The saying that's quite triggery for some, I know that I am the chosen one, and so are you. And so is everyone. But do you choose you as the chosen one? Do you see what I mean?
I think, I'm not sure of the exact phrase, but something like you are a product of your six closest friends or something like that. So either your six closest friends influence who you are, or you influence who you pick as your six chosen friends, whichever way you want to look at it. And if you hang around in corporate life with corporate people, that becomes your truth. And if you step out of that, everyone who's there going, oh, you're brave to go out into the cold and be shunned and go off and do your own thing. And they carry on doing their corporate slavery. But I hang out now, I'm sure you do. You hang out with other property investors. You probably hang out in entrepreneur space. You hang out in small business space. And many of the people I meet now, professional speakers, trainers, consultants, have exited corporate life because the same reason I did. It was just like, it was BS. I wasn't getting anywhere. Most of my network now, most of my close friends are sole trader, independent entrepreneurs, trainers, speakers, consultants. And therefore, you don't feel out of kilter with the right way of doing things. You get this sort of solace in knowing that you are doing the right thing because it's working for everybody else. So I don't feel alone anymore. Whereas maybe in the early stages of exiting corporate life, I felt, like out on a limb, lonely.
Mm. Oh, I can totally relate to that, Joanne. Totally. And let's star this. Look, there are people that thrive in the corporate world and are really good at that, right? So it's not about us saying, this is wrong and this is right and this is how, right? But it's just recognizing where do we fit, right? Why we were put on this earth. And it might be that somebody was put on this earth to disrupt and change, shift the paradigm within the corporate world. And that's brilliant. And I know that you're working really hard to already do that in your see change happen from a speaking and training perspective. But it's just knowing, right, where we lead ourselves. And also, I believe it's not necessarily you become the sum of the people you're around. What you become is the sum of the energy that you sit around, right? So if you're in a room full of people that are all disrupting the norm, for example, like me, then it's like there you calibrate to more bravery, being more bold, right? Being more truthful, like, and open in the world, sharing it out loud. Yeah. If you're in the room with people that don't necessarily have that desire or burning drive, I guess, then you won't. So it's recognizing, well, what is it that I actually stand for? What is it that I actually value? And am I in the room of people? Am I surrounded by people that are actually on the same path or similar path to me? Or am I in the room with people hoping that they will see me for what I value and what I'm trying to create and are driven towards? So it's being able to understand, what table do I want to sit at, because that table is energetically in the right kind of similar field to me. But it's being able to recognize that, Joanne, because speaking from my own experience, I tried my hardest to convince people and prove to people that the best place to be was fully, deeply, truthfully connected. And like, why don't you want this? Because I've got it and it's amazing. And you know what that did? It just knocked me out of being deep, truthfully connected to myself. It was literally a vicious circle. Definition of insanity, right? I was trying to convince everyone else this is the way to go, trying to get everyone to value the same as me. And they were just like, no, Heather. I left a community because of it, because of the way they kind of changed the community without coordinating or communicating with me. And I saw it right there. Hold on a minute, these people here don't value deep, truthful connection. And I can sit in this room for 2 years like I had been, hoping, willing, and with all my might, wanting them to value the same as me. And it's just like, but they don't. And that's okay. And then you can leave, you know, and you can find or be, or even start your own freaking table, which is what I did anyway. Right, so I love that you brought that up around the you know, you are who you are surrounding yourself with. Really powerful.
Yeah, and I love to quote Chris Evans, the celebrity broadcaster, Top Gear, Year One, Radio 2 presenter, and Bring Your Own Toothbrush. I appreciate you don't watch TV much. Remember that? Yeah. So I remember him saying that, you know, you have to be Marmite. Half the world have to love you and half the world have to hate you. And there's another quote that I can't remember who said it was, I don't have to like everybody because I don't expect everyone to like me, or whichever way around that is. So sometimes by polarizing people, knowing who you are, what you stand for, is a very powerful place to be. Rather than trying to be a people pleaser, you try to please everybody. Please the people that you want to please, because they won't ever try and please you. And I think sometimes we get so invested in our friend relationships where we often find there's a disconnect between how you view that relationship and how they view that relationship. And we have people who are, they never phone us. We always have to phone them. There are people who are pleased to see us and people who think, do you want to see me or don't you? And you end up having this relationship where one of you doesn't care more than the other person. So you've got to try and find relationships where you both have an equal partnership in the success of that relationship. But we too often invest, I want to be your friend. I'll keep phoning you. They never call me. They never text. They never write. Well, stop writing to them. Stop texting them. Stop calling them. And if they don't notice, then it wasn't meant to be.
All a values thing, Joanne. You know, you'd think that you would attract friends that value the same as you. And in a way, most of the time you do. We are all magnetic. It's just what are we attracting? Do you know what I mean? This is being able to be observant about, or I've attracted another friend who expects me to organise and sort everything out. What's that telling me, right? It's telling me that I'm amazing at organising, but actually that's not what I want to do for my friends. And I love that you've spoken to this, because I'm just about to bring out my frequency of values challenge on LinkedIn. And I do a different, slight different version. I do my frequency of love challenge, right? And I do that on Facebook. And it's ultimately helping those that want to be in community with the people that they want to be in community with, right? That are going to have a reciprocal, like you've described, you know, they'll phone you and you'll phone them. And it's not like feeling like you have to, you know, it's just a nice, easy community relationship. And that's what it's about this month. And it's about going from the lonely couch, right, to fully connected. That's what it's about. Because I was the one that was sat on the couch lonely, never had any friends, didn't know anyone, always thought there was something wrong with me, just wished that I could be normal. I was one of those people. And it took a lot, I'm not going to lie, for me then to come to a place where I am today to say that had I not experienced that, I would not be in the position I am today to say, if you're wanting to create community and connect effortlessly with your people, I can never say that word. If you're wanting to connect effortlessly, nailed it, with your people, then that's the challenge to join, right? Because I managed to do it where I moved here 2 years ago into Shropshire, never lived here in my life, was living in Worcestershire for like 25 years and now moved to Shropshire. And I've literally created a community of women around me that are incredible, that all value the same thing as me, and are all into the same things as me. One of those pub quizzes, we won 3 last month. Hello.
Yay.
No, that's brilliant. But it's just a good example of like what's possible. And I got to experience that dark and light, like you say, you know, the Marmite, let's say, of connection. No coincidence that I had Marmite on toast breakfast this morning.
It's funny. I'm not really a Marmite on toast person. I've got this thing in my head that says I don't like Marmite. Yeah, at Christmas, I will pig out on Twiglets, which are basically Marmite sticks, aren't they? So it's a really strange thing. I could do Twiglets, but I just don't do Marmite, raw Marmite, if you like. It has to be.
What you would love is Marmite with cheese spread on toast.
Probably.
Because it's...
I'm sure I've just got to try it. I've just got this story in my mind. You know, we talk about stories we make up and my own truth. The truth I've told myself for many, many years is I don't like Marmite. Yeah, I like Twiglets. It's like, it's crazy, isn't it?
It is crazy and amazing at the same time. I can't wait to hear when you first try Marmite on toast.
It's been years. I mean, Marie has it all the time. She had some this morning as well, I think. She loves a bit of Marmite on toast. Maybe I should get her to do some. Next time she does some, do some for me and just give it to me and I'll go, okay. After I chat with Heather, I need to go back and revisit Marmite. It's like for years I couldn't eat celery, you know. As a child, I didn't like cheese, I didn't like celery. And then I went through a phase where I didn't like garlic and then suddenly I broke those myths in my head. There was even a phase where I went through where I didn't like gin, I didn't like Southern Comfort, I didn't like vodka. Probably because of a bad night out that my brain was going, oh, that's naughty for you. It took me a while, but I managed to break through that dislike of Pernod. And if you try anything enough, you'll start liking it. Sorry.
Well,
for those who are listening who don't know, I stopped drinking 3 years ago, so I don't drink anything now. It's alcohol. Yeah.
I link our taste buds to identity because I would not go you would not catch me anywhere near better cheese. Yeah, I thought it was heinous. I mean, I'm not a fan of
it. It can be a bit dry, can't it? It can be a bit dry.
Yeah.
Not careful.
Yeah. And then what it took is for me actually to travel with someone who was quite energetically very high frequency, for them to order feta cheese and honey in Greece.
Okay.
And I tried it and I was like,
yeah.
Hello, that's really nice. So yeah, I do like and taste buds. To identity, to like how high you are in vibration as a person, depending on what your taste buds are like. Because the way I used to make food before wasn't necessarily with tender, loving care. My partner will joke with you about this and take the mick out of my throwing it all together skills, right? This throwing it all together skills has got me in a lot of places, a lot of compliments from people because I do make stuff up to go along, and then they ask me what the recipe is and I'm like, no idea. However,
a bit of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, however, over like the last 3 or 4 years, what I've really noticed is my attention to detail and my presence while I'm cooking has then now more started to perfect the tastes and what goes together really well. And I've been making the most exquisite tartar tan, which if someone said you'd be baking a tartar tan, Heather, I'd be like, what? Because I didn't do baking cake stuff, right?
That fancy French dish that you see on MasterChef.
Yeah, but and it's so simple. And yet, I'm like now at the place where, yeah. And And it is just down to, like, who I'm being in the moment while I'm cooking, like, how present I am to it and just really noticing. And it's not even an effort thing. It's, like, the most satisfying thing in the world is to have made something and want to eat it at the end and find it delicious. Whereas I would make something and just eat it because it was food.
Someone taught me how to make a roux, I don't know, about 10, 15 years ago. You know, how you melt the butter really, really slowly and gradually introduce the flour and bake it into this. You've got to get it almost like marzipan, haven't you, before you, and then you make this, and then you can then use that as a base for any sauce. And it was like, once you discover that magic about making a roux, and suddenly it's parsley sauce for your fish, and then suddenly it's gravy or whatever you want to do with it. And I just thought it was magic. The secret sauce, the roux, is the basis of everything. Yeah.
I did a masterclass about 4 years ago on people's secret sauce. What's your secret sauce? I'm more of a white wine cream and onion garlic based sauce maker.
Yes.
Yeah.
With mussels. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love it how we've like immersed ourselves into food.
Well, it says in your show notes here that you're a food junkie. So it was food loving junkie. Is it? So it's not surprising we've got there. I mean, I love my food. I love good food. But I'm with you on this. Chuck it in, see what happens. I look at the recipe and go, okay, I've got half of those things. I can substitute the other half I haven't got with something else, or it will be a kind of facsimile of what said it was. And yeah, I love just playing around. I made an amazing garlic chicken with kale mash once out of a hairy biker's dish, and it was like four cloves of garlic. You chuck it inside this chicken, you spread it all around, you put it in the oven, and it's like you come out and go, oh, that's amazing, with the garlic and the mashed potato kale and mash on the side of it. It was just this absolutely gorgeous dish, and the whole family loved it. I just never did it again, but yeah, it was one of those one-off creations. That was, you love garlic, you like chicken, you like mash, you like a bit of kale in it, Google it, hairy biker's garlic and garlic chicken and kale mash. Yeah, it's brilliant. Absolutely fantastic dish. Very easy as well. Just need a chicken, a couple of cloves, a couple of bulbs of garlic, not cloves. This is like a full garden of garlic. You just chuck it all in there and you end up, the garlic goes really soft and mushy, and it's like, well, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You might be hungry, Joanne.
I know, I'm going to have to dig out the recipe because it sounds, I need it again.
Amazing that you've remembered it though.
I'll try and remember, put it in the show notes. I'll dig out the recipe and put it in the show notes if anyone's listening and they want to have a go with it. Heather, I would describe you as someone who's extrovert, gregarious, outgoing, even though maybe on the inside, maybe you're not, but on the outside, you are. I meet a lot of people who go, oh, I couldn't be outgoing. I couldn't go networking. I couldn't do that. I'm too reserved. I'm too shy. Fear of being judged. Again, this is a story we make up, isn't it? That I'm an introvert, therefore I can't do anything. Whereas I would, by the definition of introverts get power from self, extroverts get power from the room, energy from the room. I describe myself as an introvert, but I perform in a very outgoing, gregarious way when I want to, but when I don't want to, I turn the light off, lock the cubicle door, and hide in the toilet for 10 minutes, recharge, and then come back out again. How do we overcome that lie we tell ourselves that only extroverts can do this?
Well, I mean, firstly, we look at where that programming has come from, because I don't class myself as introvert or extrovert. I'm just a person who loves to be on my own in my own company, and I also love to be in the company of others, right? So we have to look at where that condition or that program came from. And when we go back to even when we were growing up, what happened when we were extrovert around certain people and when we weren't around others, yeah? Because when you were really quiet and not saying anything as a kid, people would think there was something wrong with you, right? So what does that program in? Oh, I shouldn't be quiet because people will think there's something wrong with me. Yeah, so we have to go back, and this is the layers that I'm talking about, right? And we go back to the truth of that is we are everything. We are both extrovert, introvert, and all the things in between. However, it's recognizing that if there's a particular way that we sway, if there's somebody, for example, who seeks more solitude than being in a room full of people, then it's being in a position to ask yourself, is this really true of me, or am I really afraid of people seeing the truth of who I am? And I think that's a big question. If there were smaller steps, I would love for anyone experiencing that to come and join the Frequency of Values Challenge, because I value being on my own in deep, truthful connection with myself, and I also value that with other people. I'll give you an example of a client I was working with a few months ago who were led to believe that they were shy. Yeah, so I asked them to, we worked on clearing that point of view, because it was something which they were labelled with as a child, but it wasn't actually true. Yeah, and I think some of the introvertness can come from the labels we were given as well. And so there's quite a few different angles to go at that question with, Joanne. Not sure whether I've answered it fully, but...
No, we've done good there. We've done good. Basically, I think what I was trying to get at really is that it's another truth we're telling ourselves. It's another label we're owning without questioning.
Yes.
We haven't done that five whys on it, have we? Why does it bother me? Why am I upset? In fact, why does it affect me? And I guess it comes with age. You know, I turned 60 the other month, and you spend your, 50 is the new 40, 60 is the new 50, or whatever you want to say. And you get to that point where you become more reflective about yourself, what you want, what you're looking at from the world. I don't care if people see me sitting in the corner of the room on my own, playing my phone, or just staring out the window for an hour. So, are you okay? Yeah. Just checking you're right. You look like you're lost, or you look like you're upset. I just want some me time. I don't want to go and sit in the toilet with the door shut for 10 minutes. I'd rather sit out here and just watch the world go by. I'm cool, relaxed. Just let me daydream. I'm good. That's strange. Yeah, it's fine.
Also, you're speaking about what that might also suggest coming up for the other person and how it's making them feel as well. So, like I say, there's quite a few different angles to go with that, because, yeah.
I was speaking at a panel event. I think it was with eBay a couple of years ago, before COVID anyway, 5-6 years ago. And we were just talking about it, and we're talking about imposter syndrome and being introvert and this sort of thing. And I just sort of said, look, when I'm feeling stressed out, when I'm feeling like I need a recharge, I just grab my phone, go sit in the end cubicle, shut the door, and play Candy Crush for half an hour and recharge, and then I come back out and I'm good again. And the whole audience, you can see people in the audience going, yeah, me too. That's what I want to do. I want to go and recharge. I want to take some time. Okay, just do it. Don't be apologetic. If that's what makes you happy, if that's what tops your energy back up again and allows you to come back out and go, yeah, I'm ready, do it. If you don't need to, don't. I used to drink through it, you know, have another glass of wine, have another beer, have something else. That used to mask that. And you take that out of your life and suddenly, actually, I'm exhausted now. I just want to go home. It's 9:30. I'm tired. I've had enough. You know, in the past, I'd have had another couple of large wines and I'd be life itself of the party for another couple of hours. And then suddenly it's 5:00 in the morning, isn't it? And you're absolutely wrecked. All your friends have now passed out and gone home. And you're going, come on then, who's up for it? I'm still ready. You're bouncing around like Tigger.
Yeah, I mean, what you're speaking to is kind of, an energetic ceiling within us, the way we've had enough and we have to retreat and kind of recharge. My way of seeing that now, before it was my way of recharging was hiding away for a whole weekend and not seeing anyone, right? And being on my own. That was before my way of recharging. Now I just clear anything that's not mine. So if you're in a room full of powerful people, there are a lot of greater forces that are coming to take you out, right? Without you knowing that. And if you're also in that room fully embodied, living and leading with your true self, that also drains your energy. So you have like two-prong approach. Now, for example, on this conversation, had I done this about 3 years ago, what would happen is I would be amazing at the beginning and then become a little bit shit towards the second half, because I was trying to keep up a persona, an identity, with that things that we've talked about, trying to keep up a way of being, right, that wasn't truly me. So that drains my energy. Take on the fact that there's all these other things going on around me that are also trying to take some power away from me as well, right, and consume it from me. That is what we would term energetic warfare. So I get why someone would want to go and hide in the toilet cubicle, because they want to be away from that, and they also want to be away from trying to be something that potentially isn't them. And if you speak to when you did it before, Joanne, obviously at that point you hadn't transitioned either.
I had transitioned.
You'd already transitioned. Right, okay. So it's definitely outside forces for you, right? Definitely.
I just recognize in me now that if I've had enough, I've had enough. I don't need to keep pushing myself into spaces where I don't feel comfortable. I don't want to be there. If I'm not in it, I'd rather say to people, look, I'm not feeling it. I don't want to stay here. You're obviously having a great time. I'm not feeling it. It's me. I'm off. Bye. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Whereas when I was younger, I just forced myself to stay in those spaces. And I think it's, again, coming back to what we started with, is that telling yourself the truth, being honest with yourself. Do I want to be here? Do I want to go out tonight? Do I want to go and spend time with these people? And it's that fine line between can't be asked, CBA, FOMO and JOMO, you know, joy of missing out, fear of missing out, or can't be asked. If it's just being lazy, you know that if you go out, go and do it, you'll come back and go, I'm really glad I did that. So you can do that destination planning. You can start thinking about how you'll feel when you get there. But sometimes you just think, I really don't want to.
I say is it a full body yes? If it's a full body yes, go. Do it. Do the thing, whatever that is. If it's not a full body yes, don't. Because it's not gonna expand your energy, right? It's only gonna contract it. So that's my way of making decisions about where I spend my time and effort into whatever.
On that note, Heather, we've been yakking away now for the best part of an hour and a half, half an hour before we pushed the live button. So yeah, it's been an absolutely fascinating conversation. I think we're both fully charged at the moment and neither of us are hiding in the toilet with our phone playing Candy Crush. So it's been absolutely fantastic having a chat with you. How can people get hold of you and talk about your website, your podcast, and other things? So tell us what you do.
Sure. Best way to, I guess, connect with me initially is either LinkedIn, which is Heather Eggington, Wealth of You, or Facebook. I'm also on there quite provocatively sometimes. And so you can connect with me there. Or if you want to find out more about the kind of work I do from a mental coaching perspective, then you can look at my website, which is also Heather Eggington, www.heathereggington.com. Normally I add too many W's when I do that. So you can read, I know, you can read more about the work I do with others there.
It's been fascinating. If you, and just a reminder for anyone who's listening, that we did Marie, my wife and I, we recorded an episode with you, I say back in January. So do look that up as well. And that was you've got a great podcast channel with loads of video podcasts on YouTube with loads of guests that are really inspiring as well. So do look those up. Yeah. Heather, it's been amazing. Thank you.
Joanne, likewise. Thank you for having me and for all those listening. Appreciate you.
As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. Today's discussion struck a chord. Consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.